C-28. GSC Headquarters, Buenos Aires, Argentina. William Godfrey sat alone in his high office, where he had been sleeping as well as working over the last few days. The harsh ringing of his phone was an unwelcome sound in the early hours of an already difficult morning, but the voice on the other end of the line was a whole different level of bad news. "Explain yourself," was all the caller said. "Valerie," Godfrey said, forcing a smile in the hope it would come through in his words. "What a pleasant surprise!" President Valerie Slater, battle-hardened by a brutal few months spent denying that there was any truth in Dan McCarthy's leak, and then humbled by the necessity of admitting that Richard Walker's one-man cover-up had hoodwinked her along with everyone else, was not the same person Godfrey had prodded and mocked so relentlessly back then. There was, quite literally, no other leader in the world who had ever survived anything close to the humiliations Slater had endured, and by now Godfrey was not alone in reluctantly conceding that she clearly had a lot more going for her than many had previously thought. That she maybe really was there on merit after all, rather than because she ticks the right boxes for the diversity crusaders, as her long-term foe Richard Walker had once not so tactfully put it. A year on from her darkest days, Slater was riding high in the polls on the basis of doing the basics well and overseeing relative economic and social calm. She had drawn praise for making an open decision to avoid the kind of petty personal grudges which had overshadowed high-level relations between certain other Western leaders of late. She didn't have to name Godfrey and Cole, much less the man behind the curtain in the shape of Jack Neal, but she had publicly stated that she would not be making any subjective comments on GSC-related issues for at least the remainder of her first term. The GSC was bound to have teething problems, she said, and there were bound to be serious complaints from formerly high-ranking personnel who saw their roles greatly diluted, if not rendered obsolete, by the fast-tracked merging of the world's existing national space agencies. Slater had serious reservations about both Godfrey as an individual and also some specific elements of the GSC's charter, but the will of the people and nations of the world had spoken in clear support of a collaborative future for space research, spearheaded by the truly supranational Global Space Commission. Most certainly, the GSC was something she tolerated rather than supported. "Explain yourself," she repeated with no time for Godfrey's attempts at geniality. "Well," Godfrey exhaled deeply, "if you're calling about the recent incident, I expect you already know that it wasn't a meteor, as the media are prematurely reporting." "Spare me the bullshit," Slater blasted. "You've got 3 minutes to tell me why a Chinese spy satellite just burned up over Montana. 3 minutes."
"It was a junk satellite, Valerie. From what we can tell so far, an unexpected collision with a small piece of debris altered the expected entry point."
2:50.
"For goodness sake, will you at least listen to me here? We knew this was coming. We just expected it to happen a little while later. We're talking hours rather than days. There really is nothing to worry about. This kind of thing happens with satellite re-entries from time to time. It's not ideal, but it happens."
"Oh, it happens, does it? Tell me, William, when was the last time an American spy satellite burned up over China?"
"Well, I could consult the records, but I expect your question is rhetorical."
"What gave it away?" Slater groaned. Godfrey didn't reply. "Well, if you're not going to say anything, at least listen carefully. When your impotence and inaction was threatening Billy Kendrick and a few seals or penguins or whatever else inhabits that godforsaken island, I was willing to stand back and tell everyone that you were dealing with it. But when you're so obviously not dealing with it, when Billy Kendrick, Timo Fiori, and Emma fucking Ford are stitching you up like they did in New York, that makes my life difficult."
"Valerie, I'll tell you when I'm finished," President Slater yelled.
"Because you need to hear this, William. When you're seen as incapable of doing your job and things start falling from the sky above my country, well, that's the point when I can't keep standing behind you and telling everyone that everything is fine." "Okay. You can talk now."
"Have John and Jack been trying to get to you?" Godfrey asked.
"I'm not with them on this," Slater replied. "Jack is a snake and I'm not with Cole on anything. This is about the safety of the United States and nothing else. If you don't step up and deal with this, don't think we won't pull out and do it ourselves. I can understand why someone like you might think that stability is more important than security, but that's not a view shared by my government or my citizens. We need answers about what just happened over Montana, and we need them now.
Godfrey said nothing. He had never liked Slater, but he would have long respected her a lot more than he did if she'd always had this kind of fight in her. The GSC chairman was loath to let anyone talk to him in the manner and tone that Slater had adopted during the call, but unfortunate political realities meant that he had to keep her sweet and tolerate her disdain in much the same way she had previously had to tolerate the obstinate and frequently belligerent Richard Walker. But while Slater had tolerated Walker to avoid unnecessary difficulties, Godfrey had to tolerate Slater to protect the very existence of his Global Space Commission. It was no secret to anyone that the GSC's headline achievement to date was fostering an unprecedented level of cooperation between American and Chinese scientists, and it was likewise no secret that the Commission's life as a meaningful entity depended entirely on the continued support of those nations' governments. This unwelcome dependence was why Godfrey had choked out a statement which condemned foolhardy Western tourists and praised the laudable restraint of our Chinese-born security officers in the hours after an unfortunate clash at Lake Namso, a mealy-mouthed comment which drew derision on both sides of the Atlantic and nothing more than a cursory nod from Beijing. That had been uncomfortable, but Godfrey liked Ding Ziyang a lot more than he liked Valerie Slater, and defusing a potential powder keg of a situation by any means necessary was a lot more palatable to him than listening to the barely concealed glee in Slater's voice as she spoke to him like he was an intern.
"Valerie," Godfrey sighed, "we're not sitting here doing nothing. We are doing our utmost to get to the bottom of this so that we can issue some reassuring words before the media runs wild with its usual nonsense. Everyone at the GSC, everyone, is looking for the answers you want, because we want them too."
"Then look harder. Look smarter. With the budget at your disposal..." It was now Slater's turn to sigh very audibly. "Is it really too much to ask that you know what the hell is going on in front of you? Is it too much to ask that you know how to use all of the equipment we pay for?"
"Things take time, Valerie. It's barely been an hour. As I said, everyone is working on this, all out. You'll have more details as soon as we do."
"Oh, I'm counting on that. You're going to give me a full report on this tomorrow," Slater said, "or you won't like where this goes next. Get to work." Abruptly, the line went dead. Godfrey launched his phone across the room, acting out of full-blown rage rather than frustration or helplessness. "You'll get your damn report," he thought to himself as he stood up to gather the broken pieces. "And then you'll get the rest of what's coming to you."